Good afternoon. The House Education Finance Committee will come to order. Thank you all for being here today. We've got a series of bills that have been introduced and referred to our committee that we will hear today. And again, we will have the motion individually for each one, but just so for the members and the public that is here, it's the intention to lay these bills over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. But so with that, I think we'll go ahead and start with the minutes. And let's see, Representative Mariani, would you like to move approval of the minutes from February 10th?
Madam Chair, I would so move.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Mariani. And first bill up will be House File 226. Sponsored by Representative Halverson. All right, so Representative Halverson is bringing us House File 226. So I would move House File 226 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. But again, my intention is to lay it over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. So we've got the bill before us. And Representative Halverson, thanks for being here. Please go ahead and introduce yourself and proceed to tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm Representative Halverson, representing the community of Eagan. And I'm proud that one of the directors of community education from my school district, Rosemont Eagan Apple Valley, is here with me, Kia Brown. I'm also joined at the table by Steve Kerr, who is director of community education from Anoka Hennepin School District. I probably don't need to tell this committee how important school readiness is. I certainly know it myself because I'm the mom of a seven-year-old. And I can't tell you what a difference it makes to have your child in your kindergarten ready to learn. The ability for us as parents, as a society, to watch the students that we invest so much in grow and achieve and succeed is so incumbent on the way that they start their learning education. And we know that far too many students in my district and in districts around the state start at a disadvantage for one reason or another. And we also know that investing in programs that make children ready to learn when they enter kindergarten have a tremendous payoff. Some of you know, I mean, the dollar amounts that we talk about are sometimes 16 to 1 in terms of the return on investment. So I'm very proud to be here today to support early learning. Our state served around 29,000 students in fiscal year 2013 with early learning through our early learning programs in our schools. It's offered in 335 school districts in Minnesota, and these funds are targeted to low-income families who science shows over and over again tend to have the most difficulty achieving school readiness. It's offered on a sliding fee scale, so very often our families have skin in the game. However, there are also options for families who are unable to pay. These programs also leverage their funds by collaborating with other local programs regarding nutrition, other educational opportunities, and social service needs of families. So it really is a great place for families to find ways to be best served through our system. And the children get to be involved in many different kinds of learning experiences that really accelerate their preparation for school readiness and allow them to enter kindergarten with skills where they're ready to learn. Again, this committee knows far too much about this, but our brain development is so vital in those first 5 years. About 90% of our brain development happens in those first 5 years. And kids who start school ready to learn are much less likely to need special education resources, are much less likely to have trouble reading by the third grade. And we all know by third grade, if you're not reading, you're falling even further and further behind because learning depends so much on reading after third grade. And also, these students are much more likely to graduate from college. And so we really are talking about being able to help our students be successful through their entire learning career in our K-12 system. So by investing in these opportunities for some of our most disadvantaged students, we've got a direct reduction of costs in other places in our education system, in our criminal justice system, and in our human services systems. So the payoff to our society is great, and I am glad to be here in support of school readiness. And with that, I would hope that we can hear from our guests at the table.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Before we turn to your guests, I just wanted to acknowledge for the committee's benefit, we have some guests with us this morning I had the privilege of speaking with, some educators and students from Bemidji. It's Bemidji Day down here at the Capitol in the State Office Building, and I put out an advertisement. If any of them wanted to come and hear our committee, that we would be starting around 12:45, and so here they are. So welcome. Thank you for coming down. So we appreciate it. All right. Well, thank you, Representative Halverson, and to whoever wants to kick off your testimony, welcome. Please state your name for the record, and we welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kaya Brown, and I'm the Director of Community Education for the Rosemont-Apple Valley-Eagan School District, and I support House File 226. Early learning is our most important initiative in our district because we believe it is imperative to begin the work in a much more intense effort, as it has the greatest impact across all schools and levels. In the Rosemont-Apple Valley-Eagan School District, we have been working hard to provide this high-quality, aligned preschool experience for some of our neediest learners through our Connections Preschool program, but we still have work to do. When we look at our priority for expanding our district's early learning programming, we look first at the schools and students with the greatest need, including students in poverty, English learners, and Title I schools. Prior to 2011, our district was able to serve 150 or 6% of our district's four-year-olds in a three-day-per-week program using school readiness dollars. This program was held at community learning centers where families paid a fee based on income and needed to transport their child to the learning centers to and from preschool. We knew not only that we were not serving our neediest and most at-risk children, but many were not being served at all. In 2011, Echo Park Elementary Principal Sally Soliday chose to use some of her school's compensatory dollars to open two sections of free half-day, five-day-per-week with transportation four-year-old programming at the elementary school. Students were invited to the preschool using screening records, poverty, and limited English criteria. The response was overwhelming. Literally within a few hours, two sections were full and we had a waiting list. The children participating in the program were exactly those who we knew we weren't reaching before, nor were others. Those without access to preschool experience due to cost and transportation barriers. Since then, our district has expanded this model to five of our nine Title I schools, which are now serving 318 children, or 16% of our four-year-old population. And we will be adding two more schools next year, which will enable us to serve 18%. We also have two community sites that are open to all district students with families who are able to pay tuition. Of the 318 students this year, 43% receive free preschool, 60% are students of color, and 40% are English learners. Kindergarten teachers have shared how they are able to identify just within the first few days of school which children have participated in the Connections Preschool program, as they are familiar with the routines, the language, have an easier time adjusting to the full day, and are more independent with self-care. Many of our Connections Preschool sections are offered in collaboration with Early Childhood Special Education, and we are ECSE's preferred partner of choice. This enables us to provide students with IEPs access to preschool in the least restrictive setting and allows for easy referral of community students who need further assessment. It also enables them to receive those services in the combined classroom once they qualify for services. We also offer monthly parent education opportunities with a licensed parent educator in all classrooms, where parents learn what their child is experiencing in the classroom and are provided ways that they can support and extend the learning at home. By working together and blending the resources of school readiness funding, elementary budgets, early childhood special education, and tuition, we've been able to serve more of our neediest students, but there are even more to reach. Our goal is to use this model that I've described while serving the same number of four-year-olds in our school district as equivalent to our free and reduced lunch population, which is currently 24%. The increase in school readiness funding, as written in House File 226, would help us to serve a minimum of 50 additional students. We know that the achievement gap is present before children start kindergarten. Additional school readiness funding will enable us to reach more of our neediest students and provide them a high-quality preschool program that is aligned with district curriculum focused on reading, math, and social-emotional skills taught by licensed staff. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. And Mr. Kerr, if you'd like to state your name for the record, and we welcome your testimony.
Chair Loon, committee members, my name is Steve Kerr. I'm the Executive Director for Community and Government Relations for the Inokanepin School District. I wear several hats in our district. One of those is community education. And I think our story is not unlike the story that you heard here. We serve about 1,200. You should have your hand, the handout should be in your materials. We serve about 1,200 students in our school district. Particularly, we wanted to get at, if you will, our students who are most at risk. So several years ago, our school district and school board invested some additional money to that purpose. And so we have a more intensive program that meets with transportation support 4 days a week. The students come in the morning. There's a shift that comes in the morning and a shift that comes in the afternoon. We run at eight sites out of eight sites doing that. The children have support from all of the kinds of services that Ms. Brown talked about in her school district, the kinds of student support pieces that were there. I think that we've had some great success with our students and the achievement of those students. And I think sometimes when I've come before this committee, the question is, how do you do that? Well, there is no magic bullet. It is many things that contribute to success. Well-trained staff, aligned curriculum. In other words, we look at what we're doing across the spectrum of the curriculum that translates that down to a pre-K. What trajectory does a student need to be on to move ahead? We've done training with all of our staff, and I would say when I say training, sometimes the bias is to say, well, just the pre-K staff. No. We have to do training with our pre-K through 3 staff because you really need to look at your trajectory of your students moving through that system. Because there, I tell the story in a friendly fashion with our staff. When we started meeting in Anoka Hennepin to talk about alignment of curriculum, we found that our exit standard for math in the pre-K program was higher than the exit standard for kindergarten. Well, that causes some very interesting kinds of discussions in the school district, as you might imagine. But that importance of alignment goes both ways, and what we're doing on that work in kind of verbalizing what we want and what we're trying to do. And then another component of it is specifically communicating that to the parents in our community so that they can work with us as partners to help prepare the children to that readiness standard and that objective. I've provided in the handout that you have, it isn't probably as colorful as this, but there's a pre and post assessment so that you can take a look at the progress the students made in a year in the school readiness program. And I think the bottom line piece is 90% of the students who are in our at-risk program are ready for kindergarten. Does that make a difference in a system? Yeah, big time, because you're not having to do the interventions. Those kids are ready, and they're ready to go the first day of school. But it does impact your kindergarten teachers, because they've got to change what they're doing, because now they've got a whole cohort of kids, and we've gotten to a large enough cohort of kids coming through our system now who are coming in at a different trajectory that it's causing system change in our pre-K 3 settings. So we had to do retraining and re-looking at our curriculum with our kindergarten and first grade teachers. Now you can either take my data and say, well, this is more of the rhetoric that you hear sometimes in front of your committee, but I'll do this for you. Last year that we found that in our district, because we had such a significant cohort of students coming through that were at a higher trajectory, they had to raise the benchmarks that we were assessing the kids at coming into kindergarten. We just took a snapshot and looked at how the kids we had in our kindergarten ready program. We took a snapshot of where they were at the end of kindergarten to see how they were doing in comparison. Well, they're right in the middle of their overall peer group in comparison to where they are demographically, however. So we're dealing with the most at-risk kids. We've got an over-representation of both poverty and special ed in our programs. The kids were performing 13% higher on math than their same demographic, and they were 10% higher in the reading. So when you talk about system change, that rolling through Anoka Hennepin, we're very excited to see what's going to happen 3, 4, and 5 years down the road as that rolls through our system and how that changes the performance of our students in the achievement gap. And we've done very well in the achievement gap in our district. But some of those things are some of the positive kinds of outcomes that we've had with that. And similar to the situation that Ms. Brown talked about, we've used the church method of funding it, in which we pass the hat, and there's, as you can see by the pie chart, many different types of ways that the funding has occurred in order for us to achieve the goals that we have. And I would not underplay transportation as a critical issue. Sometimes we forget that, but what we find for our most at-risk populations, because we tried it without transportation because of the cost issues, in order to get the kind of persistence, and by persistence I mean regular attendance in class, we needed to provide transportation in order for that persistence to be there to see the kind of learning that we wanted to have happen in the program. So with that, Madam Chair, I would stand for questions.
All right, thank you. And I do have a couple of people who have indicated they have questions. Representative Erickson, I think you were first on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Halverson, what effect will the governor's proposal have on your school readiness initiative here, which I think is very good?
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Erickson, this proposal is standing alone for this committee to consider as part of the overall budget that's coming out of the House Education Finance Committee. So it's not related to the governor's proposal.
Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Halverson, you don't think the governor's proposal would prohibit us from putting dollars into school readiness when I think his four-year-old program and this maybe are a little the same or and yet in contrast?
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am here standing on this on behalf of this proposal, and I understand that there is a lot of work that this committee will be doing, that the other body will be doing, that the governor's office will be doing to negotiate and put forth a proposal for our state that's going to be best. I am a huge proponent of early learning and school readiness. This proposal is a pretty significant dollar increase to the budget, but it has not seen any real significant increase in the last almost 25 years, and we are certainly serving more students and having to serve more needs. Transportation is one. So,
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Loon. And to Anoka, do you follow your school readiness students through the third and fourth grades, especially when it comes to reading? Are you tracking that? If so, how are you doing that?
Chair Loon, Kerr.
Representative Erickson, we are beginning to do that. This is our second year of this high investment in some of these students. And so we do have some data system issues in terms of the systems mm-hmm. that we use to mm-hmm. register and track our children and to do assessment with them. We're having some communication things, so we still have to hand input, but what we've been doing is hand inputting that information into the student data system so I could tell you what I did before about where we're at this point in time with our kindergarten kids and our first grade kids. So we are on that path, but we've got some system pieces that we're still resolving.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson. You asked one of my questions, and I do have another question that either of our guests could address. I think it's great. I'm all for early childhood. As you know, I'm co-authoring this bill, and I think this investment is a very wise one to make. However, a number of studies have shown a fade-out by around third grade, so I am just wondering, you know, as we significantly make new investments in early childhood education, and if we make this investment, what are your school districts doing? How are you preparing to ensure that this fade-out effect does not occur for these children?
Mr. Kerr?
I think my comments about the engineering piece, because I'm aware of that study also, and I'm not sure if that study, frankly, is as fair with Head Start as it should be, but here's what I'll do. First of all, I'll say poverty is an insidious creature, and our experience with these families is that, generally speaking, you're building a series of supports that go beyond the classroom for students and families to be successful. In other words, there's a parent education, there's a parent engagement component, and sometimes, historically, in the traditional K-12 setting, that some of those continuing supports haven't been there. So they might come through our setting and have a level of parent engagement and support that is not possible within the K-12 setting. I'd say what we did is because of those kinds of things, I've had some very purposeful discussions for several years with our associate superintendent of elementary schools and talked about how can we prevent some of those things from happening and looking at what we could do to alter the systems, if you will, both for the teaching staff so that they're teaching at a different level and we're supporting those families and students at a different level so that we can sustain this trajectory, because we'd hate to make this investment and make these difference in these kids and then it kind of just kind of does that. I think, as Representative Halverson said, though, long-term studies, even for students who you would, quote, have fade out, there is long-term benefits that are still out there for society that are harvested years later that often aren't recognized in some of the discussion. But
Representative Seltzer.
That's a great answer, and I'm glad that you're building those support systems for those families. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Ansales.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if the school readiness program, which is a good program, good results, has merit, will overlap or conflict with the governor's proposal for universal statewide pre-kindergarten if that were to pass this session. And to the author, you may be forced down the road here to pick one or the other. I'm not real sure that we're going to end up with both of them. Could you comment?
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Ansales. I think you raise a very salient point, and I do think that this is what our committee processes are for, so that we can get together as a legislative body and really analyze the many impacts that these proposals will have. I mean, what they all have in common is that they recognize the importance of investing in our youngest learners. They recognize the importance of investing in our K-12 system. And how we do that best, I think that we can come together as lawmakers and come up with a proposal that suits our state the best. And so I welcome these discussions.
Representative Hill.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your answer, Representative Halverson. But, you know, that's fine and dandy, but if I'm a school superintendent trying to plan ahead for my next school year and my next year of taking care of children, I sure would like to have a little more direction and certainty and the philosophy from us here than conflict and confusion. So we'll see how it goes.
Thank you, Representative Ansales. Appreciate the question. Representative Firtas.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Halverson and testifiers. I'm seeing here that the program is funded by a formula that is children served and the amount of free and reduced lunch. And I guess I was just wondering if you have some data on exactly how many children are being served in school readiness that are not on free and reduced lunch, and however this population is defined as being challenged by the fact that they are free and reduced lunch. I'd like to know how many are really participating, if you have any data that are not on free and reduced lunch.
Either Mr. Kerr or Ms. Brown or
Representative Loon. Representative Hertas, I can't recall the data off the top of my head. The state does collect annual reports in which that data is broken out, so I'm, other than pulling something out of my head, I don't know if that's fair to you. Generally speaking, when I've looked at the state data, I can say this, though. When I've looked, without remembering the exact numbers, generally speaking, the representation of students who are in the school readiness program statewide, generally speaking, it's at a much higher percentage of free and reduced than would be the norms for their school districts, and so that will vary by school district, but it is almost in all cases is represented as a higher percentage of students are at risk, if you will. The other factors beyond free and reduced that are considered at risk, though, is if a student is EL, if a student, in when they go through preschool screening, would show some developmental delays, perhaps, that might start them out. So there are other factors other than free and reduced that school districts can say, yes, this might be a student who would benefit from being in this kind of a setting, so that you can't just rely exclusively on the free and reduced count as a measure of at-risk. School districts have that option if they see something in that screening process. And we have other early ed programs, such as our ECFE program, early child family, where if we run across these kinds of families that the child is displaying a risk factor, some of the advantage of the early learning system is it's a way to kind of see where these students might come up and start to work with them earlier so that they have a chance to be ready with their peers for the start of kindergarten. I think that's a fair way to answer your question.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you. And I appreciate that answer. And I know that we want to target resources to making sure that we lift people up out of poverty, but I also want to make sure that those families that have children who don't qualify or their children aren't part of this challenged profile also have access to the advantages of what early learning has to do for their children, even despite the fact that they're not socioeconomically challenged.
Mr. Kerr.
Representative Lewin, I know this isn't the place for debate necessarily, but at least Representative Hertas, I would say this. I would say best practice for us in our classrooms would be to have some mixed populations. The reality is, as Representative Halverson talked about, in essence, this program was funded in 1991. The only change in funding that has occurred since 1991 occurred last year, and there were $2 million added to a $10 million program. Clearly, there, unless it was through miracles or lottery tickets, there is no way that we were able to, you know, sustain that kind of service level across the state in the face of inflation. So to some degree, programs have had to focus on what's our highest priority, and to some degree, if you said, what would I do ideally, I would probably have more of a mixed population in these classes to give the students benefit from those kinds of settings. So I think, you know, if I had a choice, that's probably what I would do. But since we have limited resources, we focus more.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. And if the funding is contingent upon that lottery ticket, today is your lucky day to buy that one.
Well, are you finished, Ms. Representative Hertas? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm a bit confused because I thought last year we deleted the one word so you can just refer to as free when we did the school lunches, because I thought we funded the reduced so that they are free in a bill to allow hot lunches for everyone. And I thought we were at about 40% for that. But getting on to this discussion, we continually hear free and reduced. But frankly, there are a lot of families that have a single parent. And when you're talking school readiness and the bandwidth and time constraints on a single parent, I think we're not doing justice to students that need the assistance if we don't look at having them included in the programs, no matter what, you know, if they're a dollar over, oh my goodness, but it should be based off of the children that need it. So hopefully we can be forward thinking on that. I'm not hearing those percentages quoted, you know, when we're talking about young children. And we all know parents are so key. Now, I understand this is for inclusion, possible inclusion as part of the, but what I heard when I talked to between a dozen and two dozen superintendents recently, they would like, whether it's pre-K, school readiness, ECFE, those type of funds to be put into a portion of the budget, and the schools to have the flexibility to use that effectively in that arena, not to move to the general, not to shift over, but allow them the flexibility, because depending on your school population, you mentioned transportation, you mentioned other things pop up, and by having it there to service the young children coming in, I think that's a commendable thing, because no one knows the children. They know the children by the face and their name, We know by numbers on these sheets. And frankly, I like these programs, but I think we need to look to the children in delivery. So the question to the testifiers would be, do you have an idea of proportionality of single-parent children in your programs?
Ms. Brown?
I don't have that information with me, but I can certainly get that for you.
Representative Kwan, it is, if I'm not mistaken, it's one of the data points that we report to the MDE on an annual basis, is those families who tell us that they're single-parent families. But I just don't know what that number is off the top of my head.
Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just didn't want to let the idea go that that's still thought of much, the fade-out, so-called fade-out thing. I think you're talking about the old Head Start study from, 20 years ago or something? And I think it was it Pennsylvania or something like that? But that's pretty much hugely criticized anymore, and all the most recent research. I haven't heard of anybody that really stands by that anymore. Right here at the university, we now have the guy who's the leader on the longest longitudinal study, the Chicago one, on effect of early childhood. Art Reynolds moved here recently, or last year or something, 2 years ago. The same with Art Rolnick's. Perry, I think he based it on the Perry preschool study, if I remember right. But everything is that early childhood brain development has a huge continuing effect and places the children at a much better, it doesn't fade out, it's the fact that if they continue to have a lot of negative factors and no positive factors like other kids, they're going to slip. But the fact of the early childhood is still, I think, basically uncontroverted that it's a tremendous effect.
Okay. Do you have any questions for the testifiers or just raising the point?
I just wanted to straighten out.
Very well. I don't know if you had another question. I had one quick question, and Ms. Brown, I'm just keying in on some of your testimony and some of the statistics you quoted about the number of children you're serving in that. Under this proposal, I think you said you're providing services for about, 16% of the four-year-olds, and you have maybe 24% that are free and reduced in your area. I'm wondering if Representative Halverson's bill then would allow you to, you said 50 additional children. Does that get you pretty close to covering the population that you're most seeking to provide services for?
Yes, it certainly would help. The 50% would assist us to get to the 24% of what our current reduced or free lunch population is right now. Yeah. And that was a minimum. We'd reach a minimum of 50 students.
All right. And then just one other clarifying point. I think you said, and maybe for either you or for Mr. Kerr, that you also you offer services to families on a sliding fee basis, correct?
Correct.
And some of that is in statute because of the school readiness statute.
Correct. Okay. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Anoka representatives. I'm just doing the math here. You're serving 1,240 students. 54% of those are sliding scale, 240, and then 165. I did the math. It came out to 1,075 students. Is there another group of students there that that we're not looking at?
Mr. Kerr?
I'm not a math wizard, but I did figure it out.
I'm not sure which number we're referring to.
Representative Detmer.
Well, Madam Chair, on page, with the student profile, it's 1,240 students. 54% of those, which would be 670 students, and then you add 240 of those students, and then 165 students, that equals 1,075, if my math is right.
So the question is, are there other students?
Correct. Are there
Yes. There would be other students. There are other students in the profile, yes, that aren't included in the profile as a specific breakout.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. Is there anyone else from the public or in the audience who wishes to offer testimony, either in favor of or with concerns about the bill? Ms. Keller? Welcome. Please state your name for the record and offer your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we are here today to support this bill. We've had a long-standing position on school readiness, and we have, I did find a number. Minnesota Data Book is available in the House Research upstairs, and it contains lots of great facts. But there is one fact about school readiness I wanted to share with you. They say that 333 school districts out of 336 have a school readiness program. So that's pretty impressive. As we talk to board members and superintendents around the state, their number one focus for school-based early childhood programs is school readiness by far. It's the piece we hear over and over again. And as Representative Quam mentioned, flexibility maybe in how we use some of these funds might also be good, keeping it out of the general fund budget, but making them go a little bit better. And you're going to find me doing this a lot this session, and I feel a little duplicitous doing it. But we have a lot of money on the table with these bills today, members. And we as school districts are really looking for an inflationary increase so we can pay the increased gas and transportation contracts we have to deal with on a daily basis. And that has to, there's a cup that has to be filled there, and then if you would like us to do additional programs, that also has a cup. And I would suggest that money on the formula, school districts could invest more in school readiness, which I already hear makes the top 10 list. For the things we'd like to have. So just for your consideration, I'm going to try and get up and remind everybody all along that a lot of these programs are enhanced by the school district and the staff we have in place. And I know Hennepin is a great example of that. So thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Are there any other individuals in the audience who wish to testify on House File 226? All right, I don't see anyone, so... Representative Halverson, any closing comments you'd like to make?
Just appreciate the committee's consideration.
Thank you, Representative. All right, and with that, I will renew my motion. The House File 226 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate having you here today. Thank you. All right, so now I would ask Representative Wills and if Representative Bernardi are both here, if you want to come down, because your bills are very similar. All right, well, welcome. Thank you very much, both Representative Wills and Representative Bernardi. And first, we'll go ahead and get both of the bills formally before the committee. First, Representative Wills would move consideration of House File 568 to be referred to Committee on Ways and Means, but with the intention that it be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And Representative Wills, if you want to briefly explain your bill, we would welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Bernardi and I were just commenting to each other that we've been in this situation before. We've worked on similar legislation and were able to present together last term. So it's good to be together in a united front on this issue. So just a couple of comments about House File 568. It is implementing the governor's recommendation to increase the Reading Corps funding to $10 million in funding over the biennium. And we do have a presentation that explains the program, and so I didn't want to take a very long time explaining why this is an important investment, because I believe that the information in the presentation will speak for itself, but I certainly would hope that Representative Bernardi would add her comments if she has anything to add.
No, I look forward to the presentation myself, Madam Chair, as well as our testifiers today. I brought someone from our community who you had seen someone else from the school district because they had achieved extraordinary results, and she's going to share her story from Columbia Heights School Elementary School today.
We will look forward to that. Thank you.
Might as well start the presentation for the testifiers.
We have a strong showing in support of this bill. So we've got several testifiers.
Madam Chair, my name is Dave Heisted. I'm currently the Executive Director for Research at Bloomington Public Schools, and prior to that I was in Minneapolis Public Schools for 25 years. I'm pleased to be here to provide some of the empirical data supporting the effectiveness of the Reading Corps, and in particular highlight a recent study that was done to see if students who were involved in Reading Corps were prevented from going into special education, and the potential cost savings that would bring to taxpayers. The PowerPoint is before you. It's in color, I'm going to start on page 2, talking about the overview of the special education study. This was while I was still at Minneapolis Schools as the director of research. I was asked to do an independent evaluation of the Reading Corps with particular emphasis on special education. So I was able to download all the information from the MARS, the state MARS file, to find the classifications of students, and then take kind of a scientific approach to putting together a control group that would match the students who were receiving Reading Corps. So the idea was to find out if the Reading Corps students a year later were less likely to be in special ed than the match comparison group. I will briefly go through the methodology and leave some time for questions if you have any. So the match sample did find a statistically significant difference between special ed placement for Reading Corps versus the comparison group, at the end I'll estimate the cost savings. The matching variables that were involved, because Minneapolis is a very large district, I was able to find almost a perfect match for every student. Based on the 2010 literacy scores, special ed disability categories, English language learner, home language, free and reduced price lunch, racial ethnic category, prior attendance, whether students attended at 90% or higher the previous year or were in a different category. Gender, we know that boys and girls differ at this age, so you do find girls are doing better, so you have to put that in. Homelessness status, and then if I found identical students that could be in the comparison group, I broke the tie by their birthday. So the birthday closest to the student who was in the Reading Corps. So I found that comparison for every single student in Reading Corps on at least 7 of these 9 variables. So it's a very strong match, and it's the kind of scientific methodology that what works site in Washington would accept as a powerful design to find causal impacts. And on page 4, you can see the differences. They're very small between the students in Reading Corps versus the match sample. There were about 7% American Indian students, 48% African American, 10% Asian, 21% Hispanic, and 14% white. English was the predominant home language, but there were 35% in each group that were non-English speaking at home, with Spanish 20% of the population, Somali 6%, and Hmong about 7%. So it was a very diverse group of students who were receiving Reading Corps interventions, and we were able to find match sample both on the demographics and also prior attendance, homelessness, gender, etc. At the bottom of page 5, you'll see a chart from the statistics program indicating the outcomes. A year later, when we came back and checked the MARS data, we found that of the 752 students in the program, 703 were still in regular education. For the match sample, 727 were still in regular education for the Reading Corps. So that was a significant difference statistically, but also practically speaking. The bottom line is that on page 6, 2.3% of Reading Corps students end up in special ed the next year versus 5.7% for the match comparison. So this is a rate of special ed placement about 2.5 times larger for the comparison group than for the Reading Corps group. Now, my colleague Bob Wadle, former Commissioner of Education, worked on some statistics to estimate how much savings this would bring to the taxpayer. So for the Minneapolis kids that were involved in the study, if you just calculated the savings for that one cohort, it would be about $250,000. If you extrapolated that to the whole state of Minnesota, the savings to the taxpayer would be approximately $9 million. And when I looked at figures nationwide, this actually might be a conservative estimate. Minnesota doesn't spend as much on special education costs as some other states. So if you extrapolated this to the nation, you might even get even more savings. So the study was the most recent. On page 7 at the top, you can see there were studies that were conducted as far back as 2005. Initial studies were done in the Head Start programs where Reading Corps members were embedded, and we found a statistically significant difference for Reading Corps students when they arrived in kindergarten if they had a Reading Corps member versus not having it. And then later we did studies for kindergarten through third grade and found very substantial effects for especially kindergarten and first grade students that were involved in Reading Corps. Most recently, an independent evaluation was done by the University of Chicago, the group called NORC, 2014. And the findings there were very robust and very statistically significant. And they converted their findings into something that's called an effect size. And typically an effect size of about 0.3 standard deviations is something that's an important difference. They found effect sizes in the range of 0.5 to 0.7. These are very large effect size compared to other interventions in education and kind of corroborate the kinds of findings that I found as an independent evaluator as well. I'm glad to take questions if there are any specific questions that members would like me to address.
Thank you, Dr. Heistad. Any specific questions for Dr. Heistad at this point? Right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. And if you have other testifiers.
Madam Chair.
Welcome.
Members of the committee, thank you. My name is Tabor Aiken, and I'm the principal at Eastview Elementary School in Lakeville, Minnesota. And I also serve on the board of Serve Minnesota Action Network, the organization that operates Minnesota Reading Corps. Thank you to Representative Wills and Bernardi for the opportunity to speak and for them for bringing these bills forward. My experience with Minnesota Reading Corps spans two districts, at Sioux Trail Elementary School in Burnsville and at my current school in Lakeville. When I was principal at Sioux Trail, we saw other schools having great success with Minnesota Reading Corps and knew that our students would benefit from this impressive program. We saw it transforming early literacy outcomes, not only for our students, but on two other levels as well. First, it's transforming our school community. Frankly, there's nothing like it in our schools, and there isn't any other way to replace it. We don't have anyone to step into the work. The tutor is critical. He or she fills a need and helps us meet the state goal for having all students to be readers by third grade. The tutor helps below grade level students develop that love of reading and transform it from something that is hard to do into something that they love to do. Mickey, our current Minnesota Reading Corps tutor, routinely has students finding her during the day and asking how long it is until they can see her again. They're excited and they're eager to continue their work with her. Data plays a big role in Minnesota Reading Corps, and our teachers see the impact. They see success happening with their students receiving Minnesota Reading Corps tutoring, and they want to replicate that success in their own classrooms. Teachers seek out our internal coach and tutor to find out what interventions are working well and how they can replicate them. This year, our Minnesota Reading Corps tutor has a caseload of 15 students, and since the beginning of the year, 12 of those students that she has worked with have met their goal and exited the program. As was mentioned, Reading Corps is providing high-quality teachers to our schools, so it's also transforming the lives of our tutors. One of our Minnesota Reading Corps tutors, who has a degree in German and International Studies, but because of the impact her service had on her, went back to school to get her master's degree in education, student taught in the same building, and is now a highly successful kindergarten teacher. Minnesota Reading Corps lit this fire, and students continue to benefit from it. And finally, as we know, it transforms reading outcomes for our students. All of our students are moving forward, but some students need to move faster than others to work at grade level. In Burnsville, we didn't have a scripted intervention model to figure out how to do this, but we had the Reading Corps model. This was critical to helping us create our roadmap, and it became a foundational element in the instructional interventionist position that eventually became implemented district-wide. Some will accuse me of being biased, and I would accept that accusation. I am biased. It's because of my experience with Minnesota Reading Corps, and I believe that we have an amazing program that we have the opportunity to work with. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of this program.
Thank you, Mr. Aiken. And I think we had a question for you, perhaps. Representative Bennett?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for this great presentation. Sorry, I can't. There, I can see you. Just wondering, I have taught in the Albert Lee area schools for years, and we've had Reading Corps for the last number of years, and I love it as a first grade teacher. Found it very successful, very data driven, lots of good things coming out of it. My question for you is, do you have a hard time filling those Reading Corps positions in your schools, or are you able to find the people needed?
We're able to find tutors, but it does take a fair bit of recruiting. We work hard at it to get the word out and communicate that need is there, and to communicate all that's involved with the position, because it isn't a job that has great financial rewards with it, and it does ask quite a bit of the tutor to invest in.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question I never asked of the Reading Corps as many times as I see them. What do you do to help the students who may have been diagnosed with dyslexia? Because I'm looking at Dr. Heistad's presentation, though he did not cover these last tables. One area where dyslexic students can be diagnosed is the rhyming fluency. And I'm just, maybe he's coming forward to address that. But I'm just wondering to what extent Reading Corps can also help with those students, because we have a growing number of dyslexic students, and I've been working with the group over the past couple years, so I'm very curious.
Madam Chair, and Representative Erickson, thank you for the question. We find that students with extreme reading difficulties, those diagnosed with dyslexia, benefit especially from the structured interventions of the reading core. They're really designed to be pre-referral before special ed, and in many cases it's quite successful for students that have been diagnosed not to have to receive the label and the additional cost of services in special ed. So it's really designed under those core principles of response to intervention, the RTI programs. And then if your first intervention is not successful, you see they keep track of on a weekly basis how students are doing in their reading. Mm-hmm. And if they plateau, then you try a different intervention. So as you know, as a reading expert, sometimes the first thing you think of doesn't work, but there are at least ten interventions in reading. So if one particular strategy doesn't work, and they're all research-based interventions. So thank you for the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was very informative.
Thank you. Any other questions at this point from committee members? All right. Representative Wills, do you have another testifier yet? Yes. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Hannah Davis. I was a Reading Corps member for the 2013-14 school year. I serve students at Highwood Hills in St. Paul. After I graduated from St. Olaf, I thought that I might want to become a teacher, but I wanted to gain some more experience in an elementary school before heading off to grad school. So Reading Corps was a great opportunity for me to do that, and a great way to be part of a school community. I think Reading Corps is really unique because it enables you to have that one-on-one instructional time with kids so you can meet them exactly where they are. Kids aren't competing for attention and they can really focus. There's also a high demand for that extra literacy instruction that helps set up kids for future success in their whole school career. Reading Corps reaches kids that don't qualify for special ed, but who need that extra support to prevent them from being in special ed later on, as the earlier presentation mentioned. You can see a lot of progress with students. I saw students go from recognizing letter sounds to being able to read stories, and students see that themselves, so that builds their confidence and their ideas about school. I'm also finding that Reading Corps has prepared me well in becoming a special education teacher by giving me practice implementing those research-based interventions and charting students' progress. In addition, this program allows children to have a meaningful relationship with an adult who they see for 20 minutes every day, and so that consistency can really help kids and their sense of self. I'm grateful for my experience with Reading Corps, the students that I've been able to support, and how my experience has set me up for success as a teacher and reinforced my commitment to serving my community. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I cannot restrain myself, but umyaya. My daughter is a senior at St. Olaf, so full confession here. And I also must say, Representative Wills was with me, but I recently toured a Reading Corps site, actually, in my own district, and it was probably one of the best days I've had in a long time, and I could still probably do the S as a consonant, a letter of the alphabet song, if I was pressed, but we won't push me to do that right now. So thank you very much. I was very impressed with the commitment of the Reading Corps members that I saw, and clearly you are very devoted to this as well. Thank you for your testimony. Right, and so with that, I think what I'll do is I'll renew the motion on Representative Will's bill, and then we'll officially bring Representative Bernardi's bill before us, and so she can offer her testimony. So I would renew my motion that House File 568 be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we go on, then, I thought we were going to do them combined, but then I have a question of Mr. Heisted. Yes. But before that, I have a question, Ms. Johnson. Did you say yes?
Yes.
Ms. Johnson, can you give us a little history of the amount of federal money that has come into this program over a period of years?
Ms. Johnson.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, I was just looking that up, and for FY14, it looks like it was $10,839,000. And then previous to that, about $10 million and a little bit below that.
So,
Representative Murphy.
And Madam Chair, Ms. Johnson, then with this bill or Ms. Bernardi's bill, where they're asking for an additional $9 million and $10 million, what would the amount of money, of federal money, that we would get? That Reading Corps would be spending in Minnesota for those 2 years?
Ms. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, we may be fully leveraged, but I believe Mr. Our representative here would be able to speak to that.
Thank you. Please state for your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Josh Downham. I lobby on behalf of the Minnesota Reading Corps. Representative Murphy, the federal dollars come in as grant amounts, and actually there are two pieces to that. There is the program dollars and then what's called an education award that a member receives after their year of service. And actually this year the total amount is, I believe, approximately $16 or $17 million when you combine those two together. The additional dollars in these two bills will not necessarily leverage additional program dollars, but they will leverage additional education award dollars that those members can earn by completing their year of service. So every member, like Hannah, when she's done or when they're done with their year of service, gets $5,500 that they may apply to their college loans, federal student loans, or to go on to future schooling.
Representative Murphy.
Okay, Madam Chair, then the reward money goes to the teacher, the reading teachers, through that are serving America.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, it's an education award that's actually held in trust by the Corporation for National Community Service. It actually doesn't flow directly to the AmeriCorps member, but they may use that at designated colleges, that accredited colleges, and to pay back their federal student loans.
Madam
Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Downham, so the federal money that Ms. Johnson, when we're talking federal money, are we talking federal government money or federal corporation money?
Madam Chair, Representative, there are essentially two pots. There's the program dollars, and those are the ones that Ms. Johnson referenced, and then there are these education award dollars. And I believe, actually, this may be my failing. I perhaps didn't give Mr. Straw, Ms. Johnson, the most recent information, but I believe for this current school year, the total program dollars are closer to $13 million. And those are the ones that we use to pay the stipends to AmeriCorps members, to master coaches, all those pieces that go into the program. It's that second piece, the education awards, that is held in trust by the Corporation for National Community Service, which is separate, two pots.
So, Madam Chair, Ms. Johnson, there is federal government money, taxpayer money, that is coming into this reading readiness program.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, that's correct.
Okay. To the tune of $10 million or $11 million a year or so.
Right. Ms. Johnson. Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, yes, I believe you mentioned $13 million for this current fiscal year.
Okay.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Downham, I invite you to come to my office and explain this to me in more detail, and we will not discuss past history about anything else but Reading Corps.
I look forward to that.
Madam Chair, Mr. Heisted. I just need a clarification.
Yes, sure.
on, I have this, and you were talking, giving the graph and so forth of savings. And we were saving, having savings money, but we were, it seemed to me that what you were saying is we were spending more money and then we would have more savings. And could you explain that a little bit better to me?
Dr. Hasted.
Yes, and I'm not the expert on the finances that Mr. Wadle is, but the estimates that he did were based on the actual costs of assessing a student for special ed and then placing the student in special ed and a year's worth of special education services as averaged across Minnesota. So the savings are those costs that would have been borne by the district, obviously with state reimbursement, for those special ed services. So instead, we have much lesser cost to the district for the reading course. So if you take the cost of being in special ed per year and subtract the cost of being in reading corps, the remainder would be savings to the state or to the district, whichever way you looked at it. So this is the cost per student would be reduced by not having students placed in special education, if that helps. And then we could, Bob and I could actually come to your office too if you'd like.
But Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Hasted, but we're not getting nearly the federal match from special ed funding that we're getting for this reading corps program. Yeah. Am I correct?
And if you're talking about the cross-subsidy problem, well, I'm with you 100%. I have my doctorate in special ed and have been pushing on that ever since I found out how much the cross-subsidy was. It's unfortunate that we don't get more reimbursement from the feds.
Very unfortunate, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that we can count this as savings then. I mean, I think it's really lucky for the kid that's learning to read and having more success in their life earlier than they are before they are assessed for special ed and so forth. And I think that in itself has a worth, but not a value that we can place on it. But to try to convince us about the savings, I'm not sure about that.
Dr. Hasted.
I would concur that the greatest benefit is to the individual child, and if there were no cost savings at all, I would be strongly supporting the reading corps' impact on society. But I do think there is some financial benefit even when you factor in how much money the feds are putting in. And the Reading Corps has been looking into having an economist actually do the cost-benefit analysis the way that they do. Art Rolnick is an expert in this area. If we could get somebody, maybe one of Art's students, to actually calculate out all the cost and benefits, we could give you a better estimate of the total savings. So that's something I think that a Reading Corps would be interested in doing, is getting a better analysis of that cost figure for you.
Representative Murphy.
I won't prolong anymore, but I also would like to thank Ms. David for her testimony and for reminding us that a new generation is ready to take over and that we are old.
Just thank experienced you. Representative Murphy.
No, when you look at Ms. David, it's more than experience.
All right, so again, I would renew my motion to lay over House File 568 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And with that, I would now move that House File 674 be referred to Ways and Means, and but with the intent that today we will lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Bernardi, welcome, and please offer whatever comments you would like to about your bill, and then we'd love to hear from your testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pleased to be here before the committee, and I when I carry this bill, I think of our neighbor friend, who he was in third grade, and he was really, really struggling in reading. And I remember the administration said, "We just don't have any extra help to help you," and told his mother that, actually. And so I see Reading Corps as a tool and an intervention to help kids that are struggling. Our friend, he struggled throughout his educational career, and he's wanted to go to college and hasn't been able to finish. And so I really believe that these interventions early on really help young people and families. And so I want to introduce Michelle DeWitt today. She is the principal at Highland Elementary School in Columbia Heights. And as you know, that school district is seeing incredible results and has, as they call them, lots of great scholars there who have great challenges in their family, and they're being very successful. So I want to thank her for her work and have her share her testimony.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Michelle DeWitt, principal at Highland Elementary and Columbia Heights Public Schools. This is our fifth year as a service site with Minnesota Reading Corps. We currently have two Minnesota Reading Corps tutors at Highland, although we have applied for three next year, so we hope we get additional service. Along with the two Minnesota Reading Corps tutors, we do have an internal coach that is a reading specialist in my school, so she's able to support the Reading Corps tutors. Highland Elementary is a very diverse building. We're 80% free lunch. I won't put in the reduced. 80% free lunch and about 40% EL students. We have about 15% of our students are identified special education. So we're a building and a district with a great deal of need. Minnesota Reading Corps really benefits our students from bringing in highly qualified tutors that are not licensed teachers. So highly qualified ranges from having a high school diploma through a college degree. However, most times not an education. They may have started an education program but haven't finished. What makes the tutors highly qualified is the training that they receive prior to starting their work at the beginning of the school year, and also continual coaching from our internal coach in the building, as well as the master coaches that come from Minnesota Reading Corps. They're able to provide the tutors with ongoing training. The tutors have the responsibility of serving students in the building. A full caseload is 15 students. So in my building, currently we're serving 30 students with Minnesota Reading Corps. It's a drop in the bucket when you look at 250 children in K through third grade. However, I do have great statistics that show that Minnesota Reading Corps works for our students. Last year, our third graders on the Minnesota Comprehension Assessment, our students that received Minnesota Reading Corps tutoring, and that they could have been over multiple years, statistically, they were proficient, so they met or exceeded proficiency at 75% compared to their peers in our school at 60%. And 3 years ago, we had a high of 85% of our students who received Minnesota Reading Corps tutoring met proficiency on the state exam in third grade, again with a comparison of about 60% proficiency. We also see great growth. Our building does MAP testing, so measures of academic progress, which is given in the fall and given again in the spring, so we're able to see a year's worth of growth. We do track Minnesota students served with Minnesota Reading Corps from kindergarten through third grade, and compared to their peers who do not receive this service, and they outperform their peers significantly.
Thank you. Any questions from committee members? Madam Representative
Chair.
Erickson.
Could Ms. Johnson, I hate to be too historical because I know that's the role of Representative Murphy, but
I know I was a co-author of this bill in 2003. Did we start with $1 or $2 million? Are you able to, or Mr. Strom, do you remember what we appropriated in 2000, the first time around? Thank you.
We'll get that information to you.
I know, Madam Chair. We started with it a little bit, but look, it isn't this great.
It's terrific. So, thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, not a question, but in my immediate past job, I was a teacher of personal finance and actually had the opportunity to teach Reading Corps members. Not their content or pedagogy, but personal finance, because we do ask these people to live on very little money for the year while they serve. Outstanding experience. I also, as it happens, also Reading Corps is officed in the same building that my previous employer actually owns and was officed in, so I interacted with folks a couple of ways. Rigorous when it comes to the use of data. Absolute voracious consumers of information. Also, interestingly, I think if we put it in a larger context, the context that's been provided is excellent, but the larger context, a number of the AmeriCorps members were young people like Hannah, but I also know some that were more mid-career professionals who were looking for a transition and wanting to bring that experience to the classroom. Now, some of them have also been turned off by work-life balance issues in education. And some of them were also clearly older, and maybe this is how they were going to spend some time as they transition to retirement. But as we look at issues around teacher induction and training and experience and how do we bring people into the profession, I think this may also be a useful strategy in that respect, bringing, you know, energetic people from across the age spectrum with a high level of training into the schools where they can see it, experience it, and then decide, do they want to continue? So great bunch of folks doing the work, and a larger context, I think, another way to see the value in the program. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Devaney. I would echo your comments wholeheartedly. I think I transitioned from the nursing profession, was one of the volunteers that was working in our program, a mom, I'll say, in probably my age range, so she had kids in college and that, and just
experience.
Was experience, exactly, and just loved it. She was coming to the end of her four-year time period where she had to basically get out of the program and was very sad about that date coming soon. So, Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and just a general question about Reading Corps. Is there any and the people that are involved in Reading Corps are just outstanding people. Is there any part of Reading Corps that involves the parents, getting them so we have what's going on with Reading Corps at school? Maybe these things could be going on at home with parents and reading.
Ms. DeWitt.
Thank you, Representative Dittmer. We do provide, just as someone mentioned, progress monitoring with parents on a very regular basis. Our tutors progress monitor on a weekly basis, which is provided to parents, as well as information about the intervention, one of the 10 intervention choices that they're working on with the students, that they can provide extra support at home as well with the same model. There's very simple one-page sheets that will talk to the parents about how to work on those skills at home.
Thank you.
All right. I don't see any other questions from committee members at this point, so I would just, I'm sorry.
David Parker, Madam Chair, committee. I'm research director, and I just thought if I could, I would add to that comment, because we do been involved with the program for many years, and have spent some time building up a family component. So for the two branches of our Reading Corps, the pre-K and the K-3, we have very intentional family literacy activity materials that the tutors actually send home that complement the activities that occur during the school day. And that those activities have a research base, and they have materials pre-made for the tutors to be able to send back.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. All right, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Parker. At Columbia,
Columbia Heights? Do you work at Columbia Heights as their research director?
Yes, I am David Parker, Madam Chair, Committee, research director for the Serve Minnesota organization that is the parent organization of Reading Corps and Math Corps. So I'm with the overall organization.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you. All right. Are there any other members of the audience or the public who wish to offer testimony on either Representative Wills or Representative Bernardi's bill? And any closing comments from the authors? Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank the committee members for their interest and questions today. And you've seen some excellent examples of how this program has been effective across the state. And I just wanted to give a few numbers and what the difference of what we have now and what this bill would provide. Currently, we have about 1,000 tutors across the state of Minnesota serving in about 700 elementary and preschool settings. And so that comes out to be about 30,000 students across the state. And with the additional funding in this bill, that would increase to about 1,480 tutors across the state, which would also be servicing an additional about 14,000 students. So we would have 44,000 students across the state of Minnesota who would benefit from this program if we were able to get this increase in funding.
Thank you. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank Representative Erickson for her vision a number of years back. So that was a great start. I don't know if she heard that, but anyway. Representative Erickson, I was just giving you kudos for having the vision to help start get this going in our state a number of years ago. So that's awesome. And I just wanted to mention what Representative Dabney talked about. There's some survey results that were done in 2013 and 14, and one of the numbers that jumped out at me, because a lot of the numbers were 96, 93, 97%, the number that jumped out at me was 66%. And I thought it was actually a good number that was 66%, because that means other people figured out they didn't want to do this profession because I'm considering a career in teaching or education. What a great opportunity to find out if it's going to work out or if it's something that you want to do. And so 66% of the time, people said they strongly agree. And 16% had no opinion, and 17% strongly agreed. And that's probably a really good number, so they know that that's not the place to go. But I bet it was a positive experience nonetheless.
Thank you. All right. Well, with that, then I would renew my motion that House Bill 674 can be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And thank you both and to all your testifiers. We appreciate it.
Yep, appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, and let's see, Representative Peterson, if you want to take the chair, we'll turn the gavel over to you so I can actually present on my own bill.
Thank you, Representative Loon. We'd now like to bring House File 318 before the committee. And Representative Loon, would you like to move your House File 318 to refer to the Committee on Ways and Means?
I would, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. And it's the Chair's intention to lay the bill over for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. And now, Representative Loon, if you'd like to testify on House File 318.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and representatives. For those of you who have been in the legislature for a few years, you're probably familiar. I and Representative Seltzer actually have passed this bill back and forth in the past couple of sessions. And so 4 years ago, I first offered legislation to offer a grant to help augment the services provided through the parent-child home program. This is a program that was piloted many years ago, I think 45 years ago or so, out of the state of New York, but has been picked up and implemented in the state of Minnesota by Jewish Family and Children's Services of Minneapolis. It is just simply an amazing program. It's a voluntary program that serves families in poverty. And if a family opts to receive these services over a series of really 2 years, very young children, usually around the age of two, and their parents work with a trained person from the program that comes to their home twice a week and provides services through introducing a book or a toy and then some literacy and educational, I'll call them learning games, with the parents and the children, and really reinforces some skills that we want children to receive to help get them ready for kindergarten. There's a long history of data on this program, not only in Minnesota, but going, again, back from the start of it, that we know that children are learning through this program. It's having an incredible impact on their academic success once they get into school, but it also is impacting the lives of their parents as well. Many of the parents also go on to increase their educational attainment and really are able to lift the economic status of the families, and I think all that is due in large part to their participation in this program. So I will let the real expert speak to you all, but it's something that I've been proud to learn about, to be supportive of, and I hope we will be able to find a little money for it in the omnibus bill later this year.
The chair now invites Judy Halper to testify on House File 318. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Madam Chair, Committee, I'm Judy Halper, the CEO of Jewish Family and Children's Service, and I want to offer my appreciation to both Representative Loon and to Representative Seltzer and all for their past support and for the many people who are supporting this program from the committee today. I'll fill in a few cracks here, a few of the details of our program. We brought this program to the state of Minnesota about a little over 8 years ago, and this program has been around since 1965. It was developed in New York by a child psychologist who asked the question, what divides low-income, low-educated children from their middle-class peers? And through her research efforts, what she found was that brain development was informed by literacy, and she was able to prove that by providing more words, more language to low-income and low-educated families and young children, that their brains grew and that they were, with that simple awareness, school-ready. And in fact, her research showed that by the time low-income and low-educated reach kindergarten, compared with their middle-class peers, they've heard 20 million fewer words. So the point of her program then that she developed was to create a home visiting program to eliminate the barriers. We all know that low-income and low-educated families experience many barriers towards receiving programs and services. So to eliminate the barriers of transportation, to eliminate the barrier of cost, this is a free program, to eliminate the barrier of having to be in trouble, there's no stigma, there's no prior criminal activity or what have you that would get them into this program. But simply by volunteering for the program, and by offering free toys and books, families would sign up for this program, and we've certainly found that to be true. We've been at capacity since we started this program, and as Representative Loon mentioned, that this program tracks outcomes on both parents and children, and it's very specific. We have the program is done with complete fidelity throughout the United States. And it requires us to do a variety of different outcome measurements that measure both the learning and language acquisition of the children and also what happens with their parents as they take their place as their children's primary educators. And the kinds of things that we are asked to note is additional schooling that the parents go back for or additional training and how they advance in their work. And we like to think of this program as not just a literacy program, but really as a workforce development program, because what it does is it helps the parents to become increasingly independent. And, of course, we believe that 20 years from now or less, these children who have participated in this program will be workforce ready. And I'll just put a few books up here and toys so you can see the very simple tools of this program. It's nothing fancy. It's the kinds of things that you find in middle-class homes. They're just the kinds of books and toys that you would find at Target or wherever you shop. And most of the participants in our program are English as second language learners. Spanish, Somali are the languages most often found in the home. And the program requires that we provide the books in their native language, but we find that more often than not, our families are asking for the books to be in English. Our home visitors also represent the families that we serve. We have home visitors who speak Spanish, who speak Somali, and we have graduates of our program who are now home visitors themselves. And as was mentioned, this program is a two-year program. It runs 30 weeks a year for a total of 60 weeks, two visits a week, 120 home visits.
Thank you for your testimony. Now we'll move on to member questions. And first we'll start with Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a comment. I'm proud to be associated with this bill for the last number of years, and I just want to urge my colleagues here to continue to support this well-researched program, which not only allows parents to become what they want to be, which is their child, not only their child's first, but their child's best teacher, and then also allows them and encourages them to be all they can be.
Thank you, Representative Seltzer. Now we'll move on to Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Halper, could you speak to the cost of a home visit? You say it's a free program, and we're being asked to appropriate money for a free program. And so please tell us about the costs and why.
Yeah,
what we would buy with our money.
Sure, Madam Chair and committee. Well, the program is free to the participating families, of course. It costs between $4,500 and $5,000 per year per family, so a total of $9,500 to $10,000 for 2 years. We think of this, and the reason for the variety in the cost is because we have partners in this program. We have a urban partner, which is Way to Grow, and our outstate partner, which is Northland, and that's in Cass County. And so the costs of our home visitors getting around the Cass County area, which is very, very spread out, increases the cost of transportation for those home visitors. So what the cost of the program is transportation, it's training the home visitors, and it's all of the outcome measurement that we are required to do. So it is that's the cost of the program. It's pretty simple. There aren't any hidden costs.
Madam Chair, Ms. Halper, then would the money is going to be appropriated to the Department of Education, and then what would the Department of Education contract to with the Jewish Family and Children's Service, or what?
Ms. Halper? Or Representative Moon?
Thank you. I think I'll take that one. And actually, I would maybe even ask Mr. Strom if he would know. I'm not sure exactly how it tracked. It was set up when I carried this 4 years ago as a direct grant to Jewish Family and Children's Services for the provision of the parent-child home program. So I'm not sure if the money went through the department. I would imagine they did, and then
yes,
funneled
just
it in.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representatives Murphy and Loon, the money is through the Department of Education as a grant that they're to give to a provider, and Jewish and Family Children's Services is not named in the statute, but they essentially meet the criteria of it, and the grants for the 3 years they've been awarded have all been awarded to that organization. And then the requirement that was put in 2 years ago regarding the expansion of the program to ensure that at least one, in addition to the suburban program, that one city and one greater Minnesota area would be served, that flows through to, as I understand it, that flows through Jewish Family and Children's Services, and they then contract with those services in those other two areas. So the money comes from the legislature out of the state general fund to the department, which awards a grant to Jewish Family Services to provide the service.
Representative
Madam Chair, Mr. Strom, then in the current situation or the past situations, has the Department of Education then listed or required outcomes for the money?
Mr. Strong?
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not aware of what reporting information goes back to the department on this program? Perhaps the witness knows. I don't know the answer to that.
Ms. Halper, can you help? Can you address that?
Ms. Halper?
Madam Chair and Committee, there is a number of outcome measurements that we're providing to the state, but they are based on what the program is requiring us to measure. But it has met the satisfaction.
Okay. Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, do you anticipate changing this House File 318
Representative,
in any way as we go along? Or?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I would certainly be open to any suggestions from committee members, but it's been, again, our experience, both myself and I'll let Representative Seltzer speak for herself, that that the grant money has been well spent. The data and their results from the program is well documented. But if you're interested in seeing a more formal report or something that will be incorporated into the language, I would certainly be amenable to that.
Representative Murphy?
So, Madam Chair, Ms. Halper, in the past, we appropriated like $250,000. And you say that it costs $10,000 per family. So where did the rest of the money come for you to serve all the families that you've been serving historically?
Ms. Halper.
Madam Chair and Committee, my organization has raised millions of dollars from donors for this program, and we also write grants to foundations who have supported this program as well.
Okay. Representative Murphy?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Loon, so we would be kind of a partner with the successful organization that will continue to raise millions of dollars.
Representative Loon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, Representative Murphy. Certainly the intention is that Jewish Family and Children's Services will continue their great work in terms of raising funds from donors and that who have contributed to making sure that this program can operate. This is just a little bit of seed money to help them reach a few more families.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Also, is there anyone here in the audience that would like to testify on this bill at this time? All right. Is there any further discussion? Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would volunteer to bring cookies to Representative Murphy's office to help garner support for this.
Representative Seltzer.
Cookies,
Thank you, Madam.
This is a week of chocolate.
Chocolate. All right. Representative Seltzer.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to reiterate the good work that this particular organization does. I have a long history of experience with this organization and actually, inquired about how the dollars were being used, and I'm very satisfied that they are used really wisely and managed very well and used for the benefit of these children.
Hearing no further witnesses on this bill, Representative Loon, do you have any closing comments?
Just very briefly, again, the reason I'm so supportive of this and think it's a good expenditure of a little bit of taxpayer money is that it is so successful. We have data going back, 45 years to know that it's working, and specifically about 8 years in the state of Minnesota. And what is unique about this program, again, is that it's not only helping these children who live in poverty to get into school to be ready, but it's also helping the parents, as Representative Seltzer said, to really be a partner and their child's first and best teacher. And that is something that will live far beyond entrance into kindergarten, but also to be their supporters and their advocates and their partner in their learning throughout their time in school. So I think it's well worth the investment.
Any further discussion? All right, hearing none, Representative Loon renews her motion, and the chair lays over for House File 318 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill or further action at a later date. Thank you, Representative Loon, and we will adjourn this meeting.
Thank you.